This is Audible.
Tender Hearts Taste Better in Butter by Weston Oakes.
I've always hated kids. I've hated kids for as long as I can remember. In fact, I think that's why that asshole Chadwick picked me. He was probably still pissed off at the way I had handled the whole Hispanic lady episode. I say that if he didn't want to hurt, he shouldn't have sent me. The bitch was a certified bloodsucker, and Chadwick, with all his experience, sitting behind a desk, didn't think me ramming a stake through her fucking heart was part of my job description. Well, fuck him. I couldn't have cared how much money she owed. And to make life just a little bit more miserable, I just quit smoking then. So maybe I had put a little bit too much passion into my work. Maybe I enjoyed the stress relief a bit too much. My sometimes running buddy, Alphonse, asked me how I was handling the whole 90s clean air, get to nature, non-smoking thing. As soon as they removed the wires from his jaw, he can ask me again. And Chadwick thought he was punishing me. Me! I could play that game if he wanted. He'd be lucky if the hostages didn't mysteriously turn up just a little bit dead. My instructions were to snatch the kids on the way home from school, hold them for a while, and then let them go. Not a very original idea, grabbing the kids on their way home. I can just see it now. Want some candy, I'd say, then blam! One of the little shits pulls a .38 from a Barney bag and caps me. Kids these days are better armed than the cops. The kid's daddy had borrowed too much money, not uncommon and usually no problem. But he made the even worse mistake of owing it for too long. The suburban fuck probably thought that he could get out of paying, seeing as he was a high-priced assistant district attorney and all. Chadwick don't care nothing about that, though. Their daddy had ignored our neighborly attempts to convince him of the need to pay. He had even hired a bodyguard for himself, a golem, would you believe? Those things could soak up bullets like they was nothing. Yeah, he was safe for now. But not being a criminal sort by nature, Mr. Assistant District Attorney didn't have the superior intelligence to realize that we could get at him through his kids. Hey, kids, hold up, I said, flashing a badge I got off a dead cop a few weeks earlier. The kids spun around, eyes wide and holding hands. The boy looked like he was ready to run, but the girl froze like a Bambi in my headlights. I remember thinking how easy this was going to be. Your daddy wants you down at the office, and he asked me to pick you up. I hooked my thumbs around my belt, showing off the .45 cal in its shoulder holster. My daddy sent you here? Asked the boy. The girl stared at my gun as if she was contemplating something stupid. Yes, yes he did, I said, looking hard at my watch and officious. And he wants you there 10 minutes ago. Said it was some kind of surprise. The boy stared at me, almost cross-eyed with conflicting decisions. Finally, he grabbed his sister's hand and hurried toward me. When they got in the back seat of the caddy, I toggled shut the electronic locks. The multiple click was loud in the silence. I took my gun out of the holster and shoved it between my legs. It was an old habit that had kept me alive many times. They see you reaching into your jacket or across the seat. Next thing you know, you're staring into the big black eyes of a riot shotgun, praying they don't blink at you. But as all men are wont to do, no one pays much attention if you tend to itch yourself when nervous. The caddy pulled away from the curb with the familiar roar of its powerful American-built engine. I could never see why folks bought any of those piece-of-shit aluminum plastic cars. One dent and the thing was totaled. Instant and disposable was this decade's motto. The 60s was free love, the 70s was funkadelic, the 80s was decadent, and the 90s was disposable. The engines didn't last either. Old Brenda, I had named my caddy after my dead ex-wife, had been around the block enough times to log a couple 100,000 miles, but for a new set of tires and a few lubes now and again, she never complained. Not at all like her namesake. I glanced in the rearview mirror and saw the kids sitting in the back seat, hands primly on their laps. I eyed their feet, pleased their shoes weren't dirtying up the hand-rubbed leather. I remember when it took me 6 hours to get the bloodstains from that reporter out. And like I told Alphonse, I don't like my Brenda bloody. When I slip inside, I want it as squeaky clean as the first time I test drove her. The boy was staring out the window, singing softly to himself. The girl was watching me, watching her. I realized that she had never taken her eyes off me the whole time. I took a left on Grundy and headed for the highway. Hey, officer, we're going the wrong way. My daddy's office is downtown, said the boy like he was Rand McNally. I glanced again in the rearview mirror. The girl was still staring at me, right in the eyes, grinning now. It's a shortcut, I said. I needed a cigarette. I glanced over and stared longingly at the butt snuggled up against the polished steel of the ashtray. I left them there as a reminder, but sometimes they were tempting. I leaned over and with two fingers, slammed it closed. No way was a Marlboro man going to beat me. The cowboy had met the cancer monster and lost. I had enough stress in my life without having to worry about coughing up blood every morning. This ain't no shortcut, mister. My daddy's office is back that way. I tried to ignore him. Who the fuck are you? My eyes jerked in their sockets. The little sweet girl was grinning now. I noticed her two front teeth were missing. I knew people who thought stuff like that was cute. To me, she looked like a defanged vampire. You heard me. Where the fuck are you taking us? It was stunning to see her mouth so expertly form those words. Suze, you can't talk to a policeman that way, said her brother, strangely less surprised at her words than me. Lance, you stupid fuck, don't you see what's going on here? We're being kidnapped. Her ponytail swept left, then right, as she first glared at her brother and then returned her gaze to me. I noticed how her upper lip dominated her lower and how they both turned up in a private smile. I closed my mouth, realizing that it had dropped wide open. Who the hell was this girl, and where did she get her mouth? I was expecting Rugrats, and I got Wharf Rats instead. What was up with that? I closed the cell phone and jammed it back into the inside breast of my sheepskin jacket. Fucking Chadwick told me to keep driving around. Says to me, can't you even take care of a couple of kids? Buy them a Happy Meal and stop calling me. When the deadbeat has the money ready, I'll call you. Buy them a fucking Happy Meal and let them eat all over Brenda? No way. I never eat around Brenda, and I can't stand the smell of old food. But it had been 8 hours. 8 hours of that girl spouting words that would make a crack whore choke. Where she learned them, only God knows. Her bitchy little attitude had pissed me off several dozen times, and I had caught myself twice sliding the gun out from between my legs. It was almost midnight. I was tired. I was hungry. And I was in the gimme a sniper rifle so I can kill every tar-inhaling, butt-token, stinky-ass motherfucker in the whole fucking world stage of nicotine withdrawal. The boy was asleep, his head on his sister's lap, but the little bitch queen herself was still grinning, staring at me like I was a prize pig at the fair and she was a butcher. I see the way you're looking at me, mister. What? You want to stick your little thing inside me, don't you? Jesus Christ, I don't know what the hell happened to you in the 7 years of your life, but Vinny don't do it with no kids. Any kids, she said. No, not any kids at all, got it? She started chuckling about the same time I figured out that she had corrected my grammar. Motherfuck. Screw it. I didn't care what Chadwick said. I was going to stop and get some coffee and a burger. Someplace where people aren't allowed to smoke so I don't go off and cap someone. This trappy little girl had me on the brink and I was ready to squeeze off a few just so I could get a little peace. I passed by three likely places but kept driving because some illiterate assholes couldn't understand that a circle with a line through a lit cigarette meant no smoking. Finally, I found a place at the end of a tattered old strip mall in the east end of town. The place was so old I could see the faded portions of the wall that had read Woolworth's. Now there was a store that hadn't been around for a while. The joint was one of those coffee boutiques selling things like lattes and frappes and other shit as long as they had whipped cream and cherries. But it was too late at night for me to care. As far as I was concerned, it fit the bill perfectly. Not only was it totally empty, but it sold food as well. Even better, it had a no-smoking sign hanging big and bold right out front. I slid Brenda into an empty slot near the front door, careful to keep her within the lines, and listened to her purr for a few seconds. I noted that in another 400 miles, she would need an oil change. I kept the tally in my head, see? No way was I going to let some pimply-faced high school goomba deface her glass with a stupid sticker reminding me to drive safe and get another oil change at their place of business after 3,000 miles. I placed a 45 cal back in my shoulder holster and climbed crab-like out of the front seat, stretching the kinks out of my much-abused driving muscles. The girl exited first. I grabbed her collar and held her at arm's length while I watched the boy stumble out of the car, small fists rubbing squinting eyes. I jerked him near with my other hand and then pulled both of them close and whispered threats of violence until even the girl bobbed her head. The interior of the place was all stainless steel and formica, just like a soda pop shop out of the 1950s. Only the sharp, clean smell of coffee and the small case of exotic designer juices let me know I hadn't stumbled into the past. I pushed the midgets into a booth and squeezed in beside, pinning them to the wall. I fixed them with my eyes. It was their last warning. All I wanted was a burger and some coffee and some quiet. You better get them kids out of here. Didn't you see the sign? I looked up into the face of the most incredibly ugly woman this side of a bad zombie movie. Her pink pig eyes were surrounded by folds of pimply flesh that oozed pus in a fine sheen of sweat-like residue. Her lips were cracked and thick, moving around teeth impossibly large for her face. Her two fronts, large enough to make even Bugs Bunny himself jealous, rested on her shelf-like lower lip. Her hair was tightened into a brilliant red perm that rode her head like an English bowler. Her breasts were pillows beneath a double bed-sized dress that thankfully covered her almost 7 foot, 400-pound body. I said, didn't you see the sign? I swiveled around and studied the front door. Directly beneath the universal no-smoking sign was another, a circle with a line running diagonally through a smaller stick figure holding the hand of a larger stick figure. I looked back into that face and tried to concentrate on her triangular eyes. I was credulous. You can't do that. This is a public place. It's a restaurant, for God's sake. The hell I can't, mister. This is my place. And I say, no kids. Listen, lady. I was being nice. I'm tired. I'm hungry. I need some coffee. If you ain't going to serve me, then I'm going to get a little mad. I pulled back the edge of my jacket, giving her a view of my gunmetal promise. Her eyes went from triangles to circles, showing me she understood. Now, I continued, bring me some of that Hawaiian blend, a rare hamburger, and two small waters for these fucking kids that neither of us apparently like very much. She stared hard, trying to kill me with her ugliness. After a few moments, she realized it wouldn't work and grunted, turned, and left. I watched her fat roll across the floor to its destination, where she grabbed a huge ceramic cup from a shelf and filled it from one of the several plastic decanters along the wall. Her ham-sized hands placed a steaming coffee on the table along with two small ice waters. The aroma was thick and dark, promising some good coffee for once. I inhaled deeply. I told you to get them kids out of here, mister. If anything happens, it ain't gonna be my fault. I stared after her, wondering exactly what drugs she had been experimenting with, hoping I wasn't in the midst of some crazy 60s flashback, and watched as she plodded back to her counter and eyed me with all the respect a vulture gives a dead man. What could happen? Two coffees later, the burger arrived. It was an easy equal to the plate it was served on. An immense garden salad topped the full pound slab of meat on a toasted bun that was easily half a loaf of bread. I momentarily considered mounting it as a monument to everything that was good and wonderful in the world, but rejected the idea at the last moment due to a successful argument for my stomach. Even so, I intended on placing this restaurant on my top 10 go-to list for late-night kidnapping snacks. Lance was asleep, leaning against a wall, snoring softly. Good thing, because I was getting tired of hearing him whine about not getting fed. Susan, the little bitch, was trying to stare me down again, going for that guilty feeling, hoping I'd give her a bite. No way was it going to work on me. I was wise to her tactics. I stared her right back in the eye and bit down hard on the burger, projecting every ounce of contempt in her direction. Her smile widened. I stopped chewing and slowly lowered the burger. Her eyes went from the burger to me, her smile actually growing wider. I just began to examine the food when I heard a giggle from off to my right. Two basketball-sized heads were squeezed into the doorway of the kitchen. Saucer-shaped, slightly skewed eyes were staring eagerly in my direction. Thin strings of drool cascaded in solid lines, hanging just short of the floor. White hairnets held down mounds of greasy red curls. Buttons on the white shirts quivered with tension like rockets ready to launch. Each had a figure furiously digging in a nostril. Knuckle deep, I dreaded what they would come up with. I spun away in disgust and attacked my burger again. My eyes flowed towards the little girl, and a smile made me realize that those two giant simpletons were the cooks. I spit out my mouthful of half-chewed food in a funnel of spew and let the burger drop. I was assaulted on all sides. Two Wonder Twins activated like inbred sideshow freaks, the most incredibly ugly woman on the planet, and a sweet young girl that could scare the robe off a Satan worshiper. Pain suddenly erupted from my stomach, Vesuvius and Fuji both competing for the carnage. The pain reached up with taloned fingers, exited my mouth, slapped me in the face like I was a pimp's bitch, leaving me gasping with waves of nausea. Each inhalation threatened an eruption. I could taste the telltale signs of vomit and the bile that was sneaking out of the corners of my mouth. Fumbling hurriedly in my jacket pocket, I came out with a pair of handcuffs. I turned shakily towards the kids. Lance was still sleeping, so I slapped a cuff on one of his wrists and attached the other one to the stainless steel rail that ran along the back of the vinyl seat. Another wave of pain shook my body, making me reach out for support. Ugh. I closed my eyes and felt my other elbow send the coffee cup and plate spinning away. Before they hit the floor, I had Susan in a firm grip and was rushing towards the sweet sanctity of the bathroom. Amid the convulsions and retching, I heard the girl snicker. While my head hung just inches from the surface of the slop-filled water in the orange-stained porcelain, I heard the girl giggle. While the room spun and I dislodged food particles from between my teeth, I heard the girl laugh. As I once again transferred the contents of my body to the toilet, I heard the bitch erupt with loud, resounding guffaws. Bitch. 10 minutes later, I was washing the sweat from my face and staring glumly at my drenched shirt. I searched for a hot air blower, but the joint didn't have one. I examined myself in the mirror and wondered why people ever bothered to diet or exercise. Maybe bulimics had the right idea after all. If puking was this hard, then a daily regimen could save hundreds of dollars on designer clothes, fancy shoes, and memberships to guava juice and avocado health spas. In the mirror, I also saw Susan leaning against a wall, arms crossed, a far-off look in her eyes, head slightly cocked as if she was listening to something. I wiped my face with my handkerchief and looked again. Now she was glaring at me, for once no smile. She jerked her head towards the door and grabbed the knob. It was then I heard the scream. with visions of a dead hostage hammering my brain, not to mention the effect an accidental death would have on Chadwick's already challenged faith in me, I jerked a 2-inch steel door open and leapt into the now quiet interior of the restaurant. I slipped the pistol out of my shoulder holster and two-handed it towards the most god-awful fucking sight I had ever seen. The two steroid-pumped, deliverance-looking twin yetis that I had earlier hoped and prayed weren't the cooks they appeared to be had landscaped firmly in their ham-sized hands. The only problem evident in this otherwise placid restaurant interior was the simple fact that one was standing by the table and the other sat in the coffee bar 15 feet away, chewing savagely. Shit, shit, shit! I yanked my head around, searching for what I had missed when I entered. I knew it had to be there. It was the law. There, just between a framed $1 bill and a B rating from the health department, it hung. In a simple black metal frame was the one thing that I most feared, the single piece of paper that most people were certain to take notice of. It was a certificate proclaiming and warning that this place was an affiliate member of the International Ogres Alliance, and therefore afforded all the rights and guarantees thereof under law and treaty thereof, a veritable get-out-of-jail-free card for child eaters. And like an idiot blind boy, I'd stumbled into their formica den of freakdom. The one with the hair lip and the wandering eye ogled me from around a bite of Lance's thigh as he sat on the table. He smiled, drool mixed with blood. Pus from his facial sores flowed like warm butter. I fired off 3 rounds, decided better, and fired 3 more. The metal slide slammed back, gun empty, echoes of the .45 caliber explosion still buffeting my ears. Through a veil of light blue smoke, I saw the surprised look of the ogre as he discovered that ingestion of soft lead at subsonic speeds was bad for any diet. 4 neat holes had blossomed red in the center of the monster's forehead. He fell to his knees and toppled face first like a great rare tree into the black and white tile floor. His head bounced twice, then stilled. I stared at Lance's left foot where blood flowed over the white sneakers. I wished I hadn't been so damned hungry. I wished I hadn't needed coffee. I wished Chadwick hadn't set me up with these kids. Most of all, I wished that I hadn't quit smoking. As sure as Lance was finger food, I know that if I was still smoking, none of this would have ever happened. I heard a step behind me and spun around. The frying pan met my face right under the eye. I felt my cheekbone shatter in an arc of pain that cracked and reverberated down to my testicles and back up to the fresh hole in my face. I felt my body leave the ground and fly across the room to impact with the firewall in such a way I was sure my bones had been rearranged into a Salvador Dali-style masterpiece. Yet somehow I had managed to keep a grip on the empty pistol. I fought to keep my eyes open and moved what I hoped was my arm to the shoulder holster. I needed to get a fresh magazine and reload, but my arm was all slow motion. My eyes stayed fixed beneath heavy lids, watching the approaching giant with the deadly pan. It was a waitress pounding towards me on immense feet. She raised a frying pan, bits of my hair, skin, and blood still clinging stubbornly to the bottom. She growled what I was sure couldn't possibly be an ogre translation for coffee, tea, or milk. A small form hurtled through the air and caught her on the side of the neck, dragging her down and out of my vision. I heard tables and chairs collapse and disintegrate under the weight of the woman's immense bulk. The thrashing of trunk-sized limbs wreaked more havoc as pieces of metal, glass, wood, vinyl flew over me and around me in a maelstrom of frustrated violence, with me, the thankful eye of the storm. I sat numbly for what seemed like an hour, unable to turn left or right, staring straight ahead. The screaming had finally stopped, eventually ending in a series of panting whines that had slowed and slowed and slowed until finally ending in one long, fading wheeze. I vaguely felt the pain in each joint, each muscle, each bone, each vein, each and every corpuscle of my body. I felt how the small eddying currents of the air tickled the ends of my hair and teased pain up and out of its half-conscious slumber. I felt the minuscule grains of sand under my legs and back dig into me like microscopic knives. I gloried in the returning pain, thankful for the sign of returning life. But it got worse fast. I bit my lip but was unable to stop the scream from erupting in a long locomotive whine. A stinging slap broke through my pain and sent the air from my body. My eyes lulled open, more an action of gravity than conscious thought, and I gazed upon the little girl standing before me, wiping her bloody hands on her dress, her eyes mocking me. "Get up, you worthless piece of goat shit," she said with a smile. I noticed the blots of blood on her left cheek. She noticed and I noticed, and flicked a long, thin, forked tongue out and quickly consumed what she had missed earlier. 2 long canines had grown from her daintily upper jaw like tiny needles. As she reached down and pulled me up, I noticed the thin maroon tail, tipped with a triangular wedge, uncoil from beneath her bloody dress and wiggle casually back and forth behind her in S-shaped patterns that captured and held the masculine eye, teasing and tantalizing. Luckily, my pain was enough to dull any libido I had left. I spun away from the demon bitch, somehow jerking my arm free from her grasp, and twisted back into the dizziness of my pain. I saw pieces of my waitress sticking to every surface. Some were still sliding down the walls and dripping from the ceiling. 3 heads sat atop the counter, each one more uglier than the other. Before I passed out, I remember thinking to myself, Succubus 3, Ogre 0. "Turn here," she said from the back seat. I nodded to her in the rearview mirror, the bill of the chauffeur's cap keeping my eyes in shadow. "Wait 5. If I don't come out, come in blasting, understand?" Her child's voice had an iron bottom. Of course, I watched her leave and lean back. I think Chadwick was about to have a bad day. Likewise, the contract he had on me was about to expire. I could almost hear him as he shuffled back and forth on his knees, begging and promising that he had no idea that his mark had made a deal with the devil. That he had no idea that he wasn't supposed to interfere. Ha! Ignorance is no excuse, she would say before he died. She was very good, my new boss. Better than any strong arm I had ever seen. I think it was probably her little girl look. I rubbed the leather of Brenda's wheel fondly. At least she was going to let me keep my caddy. After all, she needed transportation now since she didn't have a job anymore. It was absolutely fiendish for the devil to have sent her. Instilling the wish for adoption in the young couple's minds those years ago, nurturing it, making it grow, providing the perfect young girl for a new assistant district attorney to adopt, someone who would wait, watch, and report back. I lit a cigarette and inhaled deeply. She told me I should start smoking again. That was nice of her. After all, my health was the least of my worries now that I was a driver for a demon.
We hope you enjoyed this short story. You can find more like it to include the anthology Smoky Mountain Horrors from your favorite digital audiobook provider. This is a Conniget Media production written and performed by Weston Oakes, music by Al Roeder. The story is copyright 2009 by Weston Oakes. The production is copyright 2009 by Pulp Studios, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.